Happy mid-March to you all, and welcome to Food. I'm Kate Bittman. Before we get started, here's our weekly reminder that if you have questions or feedback, you can email us at food@markbittman.com. You can also find us at the newly revamped BittmanProject.com, where we've got hundreds of recipes and plenty of excellent food writing. Last week, as Mark continued his journey through Asia, he wrote about the Jigalchi fish market in Busan, Korea, and I have not been able to stop thinking about his picture of a giant tower of tiny fried softshell crabs. Tiny. And Catherine Miller talked to Mark about how chefs can help change the food system, offering up real deal advice and tips and how interested people can get involved. Plus, Mike Diago has a really popular piece on the Yuba sandwich, which he discovered at Superiority Burger here in New York and figured out how to make his own version of at home. His wife, Zoraida, is super lucky, as you'll see. Find it all on BittmanProject.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Today, Mark and I talked to Von Diaz, who I think of as a master storyteller. Born in Puerto Rico and raised in Atlanta, Von has spent the majority of her career exploring lives through memory and ancestry and eventually moving along to food. She produces content for what's my favorite part of NPR, StoryCorps. As I told Von, it's rare that StoryCorps doesn't make me cry. And also just spent a great amount of time traveling across oceans and nations to honor island cooking, which she wrote about in her new book, Islas, A Celebration of Tropical Cooking. Islas is a unique book featuring 125 recipes grouped by ancestral cooking technique. These are resilient recipes. We talked a lot about resiliency today, which comes with island territory. And these recipes enable people to make delicious food with limited resources, but plenty of creativity and love. Here we are.
So, Von, thank you for joining us on Food. Nice to have you here.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks, Mark.
Hi, Kate.
Hi, Marky. Hi, Von.
Hi.
We were just talking about snow days. I was looking at pictures in your book, Islas, and thinking, yeah, what am I doing living here? Anyway, you In East Los, which is subtitled The Celebration of Tropical Cooking, you explore island cooking from pretty much everywhere, the Atlantic, the Indian and Pacific Ocean islands. It's a bold and amazing endeavor. How did you decide on this?
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad it came across that way. So I am from Puerto Rico. I was born there, but I grew up in the suburbs outside of Atlanta. But I went back and forth to Puerto Rico a lot as a child and developed a really strong connection to the place and to its food. And in 2018, I published my first cookbook, which is called Coconuts and Collards. And it's a culinary memoir. And in that book, I explored the profound relationship between the American South and the Caribbean, particularly in terms of a legacy of the foodways and culture of enslaved African people. So Islas, in a lot of ways, was a continuation of things that emerged through looking at the connection between these two places that I happen to be from. And I am a oral historian and a journalist, and I'm curious about everything, it seems. But I wondered over the years, as I was traveling to other islands, sometimes for vacation, sometimes for graduate field research in Cuba in particular, and sometimes for work. And I started to notice a kind of a feeling that I had when I was on islands, a familiarity that I had with what at first I thought was, oh, well, we're islanders. I'm familiar with the climate. And then I started to notice that our foods were often very similar, but not in the way you would think, right? So it's not necessarily that we had the same dish. It was that, oh, well, you know, well, we all eat rice. That's, you know, like, how, you know, that's interesting. We all have these very old, saucy, flavorful braises and stews that we eat alongside rice or with some kind of a fried, starchy thing like a plantain or taro. And so it, for me, it really started as curiosity, right? Am I onto something? Is there a connection between these places that's perhaps a little bit more profound than what's on the surface? And that's sort of how I began. And fairly quickly, the connections were laid bare. Tropical islands are, in my opinion, all beautiful places. They are heavily touristed. They are largely colonized, right, at some point or another, whether they're independent or not. They are difficult to get to, which can often lead to a kind of insular culture, right?
Hard to get ingredients.
Exactly. And it can be very challenging to not only get there, but to get things there, right? And to get things out of tropical places. And then in terms of one of the threads that runs through Islas is that all of these places are in this very vulnerable climate zone, which is the tropics, right? The center band of the planet, where in part, you know, as a result of climate change, storm systems that were already there, right? Already challenging, already destructive, are worsening at breakneck pace, right? And they're becoming increasingly unpredictable and hazardous. So as I started to look closely at these foods, right, these foods that I felt familiar with, even if they were foods in the Philippines, in the Maldives, in the Seychelles, as I started to see these connections, I noticed that the connection was not just the ingredient, but the way of cooking. Because when you live in a storm-prone area, where it's very likely that life will be disrupted entirely for extended periods of time, you know, you'll lose electricity, you'll lose running water, you'll lose access to fuel, access to food, that in these places, which is, you know, that's all of the tropics experience that annually and have since the dawn of time, perhaps, it then becomes important for islanders to get really good at what I describe as these ancestral cooking techniques that don't require modern technology and ultimately enable people to make food that is very, very delicious, that is very nourishing, that uses what's available sometimes what's available based on what grows there, but also what's available in terms of the colonial legacy that they all deal with, right? Por ejemplo, right? Spam in Hawaii, corned beef across the tropics, and things that you wouldn't necessarily associate with those places that were transplanted there, but that people have turned into, you know, their own thing. So I feel very grateful to have had the chance to do this research and to get to present it in book form, because as the world is changing, right? I think we saw this during and now following COVID, if we can really say that we're following COVID. I think it is important for people to learn to cook in ways that are sustainable and to learn to make dishes that are things that they can perfect, things that they will have ready access to year round. And also, I think in the case of islands, food that is soul nourishing, by which I mean, you know, a lot of the dishes in Islas are very traditional. A lot of them are very old, right? They're ancestral dishes. And so my hope is that Islas sort of provides a roadmap for people who are interested in deepening their knowledge about these techniques and these places, and also to serve as an archive, a repository of the recipes of places that people often only go as tourists and perhaps don't necessarily develop a deeper understanding of the place and its people.
Yeah, those threads are really interesting. And the preserved meat thing, or the sort of imported, all of that imported stuff. I've spent some time in islands. You do see that commonality. And rice.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Rice everywhere. Pickles everywhere.
Keeps forever, right?
Fried things, you know. And there's also sort of things that I find charming that you'll find throughout Islas, which is, you know, most islanders like cold, refreshing beverages, right? And perhaps people who've gone as tourists think of sort of fruity cocktails. But most islands have a beer that is like a crisp lager, right? It's a hot weather beer. And across these islands, I kept finding these beers with the exact same qualities. And they taste very, very similar. More of what you'd think of like a Budweiser flavor than anything else. Because exactly. I mean, Red Stripe is a little bit flavorful to me, honestly, compared to some of the other beers, which are just, they're like sodas, you know, they're like refreshing sodas. So yeah, it's really been a joy. I also hope that this project becomes something that, you know, when people decide that they want to travel to an island, maybe they want to buy a copy of Islas and, you know, read about the circumstances there, right? And learn a bit about how those places operate, what the history is, what the colonial legacy and the cultural heritage is, in order to be better travelers, better visitors, and to travel to these places with active curiosity about how people live and how they eat. And perhaps in an informed way say, you know, I don't know if I need the top 10 list of places to eat. Maybe I just, you know, maybe I just want to find the city that's known as the kind of heart of this place. And I'm going to just go there and go to a cafeteria and see what they have available. I mean, that's the kind of culinary tourism that I do when I travel. Mm-hmm. I love cafeterias, gas stations, roadside stops, people's homes, you know, little places tucked into grocery stores. A lot of times that's where you get the flavor profile of the place, like really solidly in there.
Like that. What was the name of that town we went to in Mexico?
Did we go to Valladolid?
No, it's where the sea turtles nest.
Right, south of Tulum.
Yeah. But
I can't remember.
The best mole we had there was from the supermarket. I mean, it was, I don't think I'll ever have mole that good again. But it was like in a plastic Tupperware from the grocery store. It was made there.
That's how you know it's good.
Oh my God. I dream about that mole. Like, you're just never going to get that here.
I stayed at a Holiday Inn in Mayagüez just this past week, and they had a little sort of kind of buffet breakfast. And if I'm being honest, it wasn't great, but they had bacalaitos, which are super traditional Puerto Rican, you know, roadside fritter. And they were smaller than I'm used to. They were about that big. They were so good. and it was even the person serving me the food, you know, he was like, estos están bien buenos, los debe probar. And I was like, if you say so, I'm going to eat them. And sure enough, you know, so, I mean, that's the funnest part of traveling, you know, is being brave, being curious and trying things that you haven't before. I mean, because what's the worst that could happen? You don't like it.
Yeah.
You know, then you don't eat it again.
It's bland. I'd love to talk about resiliency a little bit because you write about it in the book and talk about how people who live on tropical islands are obviously, they have been schooled in resiliency in many different ways. And I'm wondering, you talk about what we, the collective we, can learn from them. And you've already talked a little bit about what kinds of things you've learned, but what are some of the other takeaways?
One thing that is, I think, perhaps an idea that I'm developing, for lack of a better term, that I write about in the intro for Islas, I'm sort of letting this idea sit, is life on islands is very difficult. It can be very challenging, and not just during storm season. Oftentimes, government structures are a bit lacking. Social services tend to be lacking. Public works tend to take a long time because they're often disrupted by storm systems. And so it takes a while to get things off the ground. Public transportation, very difficult. I personally have never taken public transportation on an island before. I know it exists, buses exist, but it's tough. And when you live on an island day in and day out, you have to develop a kind of emotional resilience. Like if you got mad every time there was suddenly a storm, if you got really mad every time something didn't work out, or por ejemplo, speaking again about Puerto Rico, they run out of things all the time. I ate at a restaurant there recently, one of the best restaurants to me on the island, with a chef who's recently been nominated for a Beard Award, Carlos Portela. And his restaurant, Orujo, he was out of salt, you know?
And, wow.
And yeah, wow. And I think that he must use, he's got a salt that he uses, right? So not like there was no salt on the island, but, you know, and I couldn't tell because he's a wonderful chef. You know, sometimes on this same trip one day, I went to a place and there were no empanadas. Right? Something that you think is just part and parcel to being on the island. And so again, if every time the grocery store was out of the thing that you absolutely needed, or the road that was supposed to be fixed 6 months ago is still broken, people would lose their minds. It's very challenging to live with constant struggle and frustration. And so I actually think that this concept of island time, right, which I think is rather curious, is part of island time comes from a need to chill out. Because if you let your blood pressure get too high about the challenges of living there, you can't live a happy life. So, you know, I think that tactical resilience, if there is such a thing, right? The resiliency of kind of being able to make do with what you have and have kind of lots of tools in your belt for whatever situation is matched perhaps by this kind of emotional resiliency and I would say also an insistence on keeping cultures alive through food ways. Something additional I think I would note that I have seen among islanders, and I can't be certain, you know, that this is an island thing, but I will say that I've never seen anything different. People keep tons and tons of non-perishable things in their pantries, right? At any given time, there is, you know, you probably have 2 to 3 weeks of food that you can prepare that is ready to go. Canned vegetables, canned, you know, tinned meats, rice, pasta, dried beans, right? Things of that nature. And you know, we all have our pantries, and mine is full of lots of little containers of all kinds of little special things that I love. And what I see in the tropics oftentimes is like, that's the storm cellar. And I think something interesting, I hadn't sort of thought about this until this moment, that is perhaps required of us, is that we start to kind of evolve our idea of non-perishables to better match the kind of world that we want to live in. Because, you know, if you are in fact trying to build a resilient pantry, perhaps you should look to see what companies are sustainably sourcing ingredients that they're then canning, right? Know where your beans are coming from. Start to preserve things yourself. My uncle he lives in Utah, and I haven't tried it yet, but he dehydrated sofrito. He chopped all the ingredients for the sofrito, put it in his dehydrator, and vacuum sealed it. You know, and that's the kind of resiliency, right? Where it's, you know, because it's not just about having enough to eat. It has to be delicious. You know, we want it to be delicious. No one wants to be struggling eating just plain white rice. We want the food to taste good. Right. And yeah, a couple of thoughts.
That is so cool that he did that. I love that.
My mom says she doesn't like it very much, but I haven't yet, I haven't experimented with it. I think he's on to something.
She might like it more if the alternative was plain white rice.
Exactly. It's not quite, I think, the taste that she wants. And I'm like, listen, if that's all we had, we'd make it work.
You'd be really happy to have it.
Exactly.
Stay tuned for more from Vaughn, Mark, and me.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Have you ever bought something, owned something that really inspired you to up your game? A tennis racket, a new pair of running shoes, a new piece of cooking equipment that made you just want to cook your brains out? I know that when I first started cooking on induction burners, I just couldn't stop. It was so much fun. When we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Some of the features that are available on this car include Dynamic Sky Panorama Glass Roof, Front Row Massaging Seats, you know you want that. Available 33-inch all-terrain tires, which you will want when you check out the Multi-Terrain Select. These are really great features, the kind of features that will make you proud and happy to own a Lexus GX. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. Hi, folks. We have a new sponsor and an interesting one. We all take about 20,000 breaths a day, and Americans spend about 90% of our time indoors. That indoor air that we breathe can be up to 100 times more polluted than outdoor air, according to the EPA. And indoor air pollutants can cause respiratory symptoms like sneezing, congestion, scratchy throat, and even more serious health problems like lung and heart disease. So, what's the solution? Introducing Air Doctor, the air purifier that filters out 99.99% of dangerous contaminants so your lungs don't have to. This includes allergens, pollen, pet dander, dust mites, mold spores, and even bacteria and viruses. Air Doctor comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so if you don't love it, just send it back for a refund. Head to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code BITMAN, B-I-T-T-M-A-N, and you'll receive up to $300 off air purifiers. Exclusive to our listeners, you will also receive a free 3-year warranty on any unit, which is an additional $84 value. Lock in this special offer by going to airdoctorpro.com. That's airdoctorpro.com and use the promo code BITMAN.
Tell us about some of the more interesting places you visited in the course of doing the book, and also tell us about the best things you eat that you put into the book.
So I wrote Islas largely under the pandemic, and it was a cool experience to get to travel to these places through their dishes. It was really rewarding. And when I could travel, I got to go to a few places. Curaçao is a remarkable place. It's a small island. It has a very unique history. And I think it had always sort of appeared to me, and this is perhaps sort of travel marketing, as a beautiful place. I think I had sort of probably, like a lot of people, I was like, okay, beautiful water, beautiful sights, vacation. But what I didn't know until I went is that Curaçao is so African. It's so African. It's so the culture of African people there is everywhere. It's so vibrant and it's really alive. I think that in many ways, you know, using Puerto Rico as an example, we see the lineage to our African heritage, but in Curaçao, it is preserved and alive. It's sort of all around you. And people are very proud. Also, Curaçao is a desert. Huh. And I had not ever to an island desert where there were some places that looked pretty, you know, tropical, but these sort of like hilly, sort of golden hued hills with these kind of like dusty sage colored plants, and very dry, very hot. And as a result, right, has a very particular kind of cuisine. It's also was Holland. The Dutch were the last colonizers there. So a lot of Dutch influence in their food, which is pretty interesting. And there, I can speak to a couple of things that are really cool from Curaçao. One dish is called papaya stoba, and it's a dish. It's a stew of green papaya and beef, and then they make a, also like sort of with a base of some kind of sofrito, some probably something like a culantro, cilantro, onions, garlic, peppers. The person who prepared it for me also adds a little bit of honey. Which I thought was interesting. And you cook these things down in a pot, and it's a dry stew. It's not super brothy. And you cook it and you cook it and you cook it. And the thing is that papaya, like pineapple, has these natural enzymes that help soften and break down proteins, and because it's green papaya, right? It's not sweet at all. It's just a very different kind of flavor. It's super nourishing, and also and like very very satisfying. And you of course eat that with rice. They also some of the best fried fish I've ever had. And one of the most historically interesting dishes that I found there is called quechillena, and that is stands for stuffed cheese. The history of it is that when the Dutch were still overseeing Curaçao, they would often leave the rinds of Gouda or Edam cheese behind. I read in a couple of sources that, like, culturally, the rind is considered, you know, to throw away. And that makes sense, right? Because the cheese right next to the rind is going to be a little funkier. And so enslaved cooks would, you know, take these cheese rinds, stuff them with all kind, you know, whatever they had, bits of meat, perhaps some raisins, spices, whatever. And then they would cook it over a fire. And so it would be cheese with a filling inside. And
oh my gosh,
it kind of tastes like, I mean, I don't mean to diminish it because this is an ancestral dish. It tastes like an inside out cheeseburger. It's like,
that's not diminishing it. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
And typically with a sauce. So I have a recipe in Islas. I have a recipe in Islas for that dish. And then the next place I went that blew my mind was Seychelles. Seychelles is a, you know, an island archipelago, a closest to Somalia. It's teeny, 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 teeny on the map. Like you don't even see it in the ocean when you look at a standard map. And it's very small and was established, had multiple colonial entities, was developed as a spice island. So the food of Seychelles is, I think I described it in Islas as a symphony of spices. And that's what it felt like, just clove, nutmeg, bay leaf, cinnamon leaf, cinnamon bark, white pepper, all nature of peppercorns, white, pink, green peppercorns. And to me, the air there actually smelled like cinnamon leaves. It was a really remarkable place to visit. And it's a place that, like a lot of islands, is losing ground due to coastal erosion. Right. So sometimes folks, when they talk about climate change, talk about places sinking. That's actually not what's happening, right? The ocean is rising and it's eating the coast. And that's causing all kinds of interesting challenges for Seychelles. It's already very small. And most of the islands that make up the archipelago are teeny and not inhabitable. They're inhabited by ancient giant tortoises and all kinds of other gorgeous endemic species. So for the Seychellois, it's climate change issues could not be more urgent for them because they're really literally losing ground. And it was beautiful. What else do I remember about Seychelles? The music, the people, so generous and kind. And perhaps that's actually a really consistent experience that I had on islands is, you know, I mean, I certainly can't say that all island folk are lovely, but I believe there's a culture of kindness, a culture of being welcoming that that I saw across the board.
Don't you think some of it comes from the resiliency that they're forced into makes them more relaxed in general? So with relaxation perhaps comes kindness. I mean,
I think that, you know, in the tropics, it's obviously like this is a hot climate zone, right? So In the tropics, people are outside a lot. And in a lot of island communities that I've studied, people don't have glass windows. They have, I forget what they're called in English, but they have sort of these metal shutters that are a kind of blinds. And so that means that everybody knows your business all the time. Everyone can hear you. Everyone smells what you're cooking. Right? People don't want to be indoors because it's steamy and humid in there. And so I do think that that also creates a very social culture that I've always found really satisfying. And then in terms of other dishes across the islands that I love, you know, working on this book really transformed the way that I cooked. I imagined that would happen, but it made me cook in a way that is, I think it helped me sort of narrow and simplify the flavor profiles that I'm interested in. And I use a lot more acid than I ever used to. And I got really into all the different kinds of acids that you find on islands. Because it's so hot, right? Like things pickle immediately. We have lots of sauces across the tropics, tons and tons and tons of sauces. And there's a coconut peanut sauce that's actually an adaptation of a more classic peanut sauce that I made. And it's so simple. And it's really, really tasty. also, of all of the techniques in this book, the brazing chapter is actually the longest, and it's half as long as I could have made it, because brazing and stewing is kind of the signature technique of island communities, which perhaps is surprising, right? Because these are hot things, a starchy thing, a flavorful protein, some kind of sauce, and you eat them together. Sometimes that's rice. Sometimes it's yams. Sometimes it's, you know, taro or yautía. But it is really a cornerstone, like a foundational food combination that you see in every island in the tropics.
You see that almost everywhere in the world. Starch with a bit of protein on top.
Yep.
Often rice, yeah.
What do you put the coconut peanut sauce on? Because those are two of my favorite things.
Sure. I've been making it for years. And anything that you would put in a lettuce wrap, definitely, you know, it's really good. I think it's really good on like crunchy things, because it's like has like this nice kind of smooth velvety texture. There's a recipe for a satay ayam, or chicken satay from Indonesia in Islas, which I actually adapted for Food and Wine for a piece that comes out in May, for beef and also for wild mushroom satay, which is remarkable. Yes. So peanut sauce goes beautifully with that dish. What else? I mean, I think it's a great thing to have on the table. Mm-hmm. And that's something that one of the ways in which my own cooking evolved is I love what you see. I think what we perhaps associate more with Indian cultures, right, where there's sort of a bunch of pickles, a bunch of chutneys, a bunch of sauces together, and you sort of, it's a wonderful way to eat because it's also back to your question, Kate, about resilience. I think that sauces are deeply resilient things, because that is, if all you have is white rice, right, but you have a pretty delicious sauce,
totally,
you make it work. Yeah, you can totally make it work. If you have some, you know, some kind of starch, some plantains, you got a bunch of them, got nothing else, got something to, you know, dip your plantains in.
A heel of bread. I mean, anything.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, one dish that I think is so cool is called vindaya poisson. It's in the pickling chapter, and it is from Mauritius. And you take tuna steaks, cut them into fairly large pieces, fry them, and then toss them in this gorgeous kind of turmeric mustard seed onion mixture. And then you put it in the fridge and let it sit. So it's this fried fish, but with this kind of pickly deliciousness. Yeah, I mean, Islas has over 125 recipes, including sauces and everything else. And people have often asked me, how did you choose the recipes? How did you choose which recipe you put in? My litmus test was, do I want to eat it? And I think that, you know, people who write cookbooks, you know, should put things in there that we want to eat.
That's totally fair. I think more people should abide by that. It's a really good litmus test. I wanted to pivot for a minute before we let you go, because you are a producer at StoryCorps, which is just one of my favorite things to listen to. Before I had a kid, he's almost eight, my husband and I would listen to Morning Edition. And every single Friday when StoryCorps would come on, Nick would say, oh boy, here we go. Because I would just start crying every single time. It's just the best. And I think we've established you here as sort of a master storyteller.
Yeah, for sure.
And I don't mean that in the fictional sense.
Thank you.
And that's
very kind.
Part of what's so cool about your work. I'm curious, what got you so interested in telling other people's stories?
So I started my career as a social justice advocate. My BA was in women and gender studies, and I spent most of my early career working to advocate for women survivors of violence, either doing direct service work or later sort of more communications. And I pivoted to communications because I have a profound interest in human rights and social justice. And I got to a place where I was like, am I really the person to be in person with people surviving trauma? Might I have another role in this that will enable me to amplify their voices. And so I studied journalism, and immediately, I mean, within the first 6 months of my grad school program, which was at NYU, it's called Global Journalism. It was a really wonderful program. I became instantly drawn to oral histories. And I think that it's probably because my work up until that point had been the work of listening to people's stories and trying to figure out how to help or which parts of their story to share in order to draw attention or get people to help. And so I just fell in love with oral history as a documentary style. It's a very kind of, I don't know, sometimes it feels like the oldest way of storytelling on the planet. Right? You sit with someone in a room and you just ask them to tell you about their lives. So I never expected to get into food, actually. It was not on my radar. It happened for me organically because I started to see, following a personal exploration into my own family's cooking after my grandmother developed Alzheimer's and was no longer able to cook, I started to see all of these connections between my grandmother, the way that she cooked, the dishes she was good at cooking, and then the history of the place. And as I dug deeper, right, with, again, this just kind of natural curiosity, I kept finding these amazing stories that were profoundly revelatory, even when they were simple, right? So sometimes, you know, you'll open your pantry and see an ingredient that your grandmother used to use, and you're like, why does my grandmother use that ingredient? For example, my grandmother used to love pickled herring and cream.
Mm. Oh, yeah. That's a favorite here.
Yeah. And I'm like, how did my grandmother even encounter this? Right. And I can think of a zillion examples of that same thing I've seen over the years. I'm like, oh, this thing, this spice, this way of cooking, this pot, this pan, whatever, tells the story of a people, a place, and a time through in a way that other storytelling doesn't always cut through, because we ingest culture when we eat, right? You're literally bringing it into your body. Mm-hmm. And so it became this, I think, for me, listening to people, everyday people, regular people, right? I never know sort of how to describe them. I'm like, well, what does regular mean? What does everyday mean? You know, I'm getting to a point where I'm just like, you know, the folks around you, I think, mm-hmm. is sort of a good way to think about who's in your community. It then sort of became this really wonderful link for me where that would enable people to connect deeply with something that was perhaps in front of them the whole time. And maybe they just never thought to look deeper. Storytelling is, you know, among the world's oldest crafts. People have been telling stories for all of time. Stories are ways of preserving history. They are ways of transmitting information. They are ways of sharing news. And I think my mission with Islas, and more broadly with my work at StoryCorps, is to be the conduit, right, between the people with the experience and the listener, the viewer, the reader out there in the world who has a curiosity. So the process of being the storyteller actually then becomes a process of enriching your own life, you know, with wisdom. And people say the most amazing things. Mm-hmm. You know, people sometimes will talk for 45 minutes, an hour, 2 hours in a StoryCorps interview and say lots and lots of things. And then there will be one sentence where you're like, oh, I needed that today.
This is such an inspiring conversation. And, you know, I don't ever not give yourself enough credit, because being a good listener is like a real talent and not a lot of people have it. So the fact that you love it so much is just so cool. I've spent my whole life learning to be a good listener. So it's really cool that you kind of do it for a living.
We're kind of done, but we have one more question for you. And I hope, sure. I expect a great answer, but you did mention that you were flying home last night. So maybe not, but what'd you have for dinner last night?
Last night for dinner, I had a Popeye's chicken sandwich from the Puerto Rico, from the San Juan airport. And I do have things to say about it. I love fried chicken. I love fried chicken. I've never met a fried chicken that I didn't like. Legs, wings, all of it, just any time. And I have had many Popeye's chicken sandwiches in my life. I've compared it to other brands, you know, just doing my research as a chicken sandwich aficionado. You know, I like to be well researched. And I had never had a Popeye's chicken sandwich in Puerto Rico, and it was so different. So different. And this is actually like, I love eating fast food when I travel, because fast food brands, like, always, I mean, especially the big ones, adapt things slightly everywhere they go. And sometimes they adapt them in big ways. So in Puerto Rico, the Popeye's chicken sandwich is bigger. There's a lot more bread. Puerto Ricans love bread. Very, very fluffy bread. And it was dark meat chicken.
Good for them.
Fascinated me, which also actually totally makes sense for a Puerto Rican market, right? And then it was topped with American cheese, lettuce, tomato, and mayonnaise. Very Puerto Rican. This is like classic Puerto Rican sandwich, period. And I was just marveling at it. I was like, man, they made this Popeye sandwich so Puerto Rican. And then I got mashed potatoes as well, because I love them so much. I just love mashed potatoes so much. And the gravy on the mashed potatoes was wildly different. I was like, I don't know what this is. It was like almost like a garlicky mojo. You know, like, rather than the more kind of brown, meaty gravy that they use in the States. So, yes, for dinner last night, I had a delicious Popeye's chicken sandwich on the plane on my way home.
Thank you, Vaughn. Thanks for joining
us.
It was really, really great.
Thank you so much. I had so much fun.
And good luck with the book.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Vaughn.
Appreciate you guys.
Thank you to Vaughn Diaz for joining us today. You can follow her on Instagram at Cochina Criolla. That's CochinaCriolla. And on X at Vaughn Diaz, VONDIAZ. Get Islas wherever you like to buy books. It just came out yesterday, and we're sharing Vaughn's recipe for quesillina on bitmanproject.com. That link is in today's show notes. Thank you to my co-host, Mark, and to our engineer, Davis Lloyd. And thank you for listening. We're back next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.